morning. Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio in the studio, ready to talk to you. We missed you last week with a basketball game. Hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. And Vincent, how are you?
Doing well.
I don't think your microphone was on. Tell us again.
Doing well, recovering from hernia surgery. That's why I wasn't in the studio the last two times.
Well, and then you were in Ohio.
Yes.
For business, right? Exactly.
But thanks for holding down the fort.
Anytime. So do we have any WikiLeaks secrets that are going to be coming out about water, you know, since that's our topic for tonight?
You know, it's very interesting because I went to high school with a U.S. ambassador, Christopher Dell, who is a 30-year State Department official. He's now the ambassador to Kosovo since 2009, and he's been mentioned in many, many of the cables. And I was speaking with him on Facebook last night, and many of the people I know in the State Department, including him, are very unhappy.
No, understandably.
Yes.
Of course you'd be unhappy if somebody is selling, you know, in internal communication for anybody. You know, if you're communicating with a friend and they turn around and publish it in the newspaper, you're not going to be happy about it, even if there's nothing important that was said in it.
You know? It's the worst security breach in the history of the United States.
Right, and it was internal. A lot of people are calling it that the information was leaked, but they were buying it from somebody who was on the inside.
The private first class.
Well, we think it was, I mean, I'm assuming everybody's
And you would think there's other people
him,
involved,
but,
right.
You know, yeah. So, no, it is ugly. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, what's a big deal? It's just embarrassing. I'm like, embarrassing for us, but dangerous and possibly fatal for some of the people in other countries where, you know, freedom of speech is not embraced like it is here.
Well, if you read some of the stories coming out of CNN or the New York Times online, it is, we've compromised our diplomacy because of some of the things we've said behind the backs of these officials. So
right.
They're not going to trust us in the future.
Well, no, because you say all sorts of things. Well, we could go on and on about that. But we're going to talk about water today.
Yes.
You know, we've been having a lot of rain at times of year when it should be snow, according to the skiers. And people talk about global warming. Are any of these things related to some of the water issues we're going to talk about later? From your perspective, as a water expert, so to speak?
The water issues that we have in different parts of our country are not related to climate change.
In our country.
No.
What about other parts of the world?
Yes, some of the other parts of the world that have lack of water. So
right, because, well, and we're going to talk about global water issues,
right.
Not necessarily here in the United States,
yes.
Because while we have some issues with water, they're not the same.
Not at all.
Okay. We have a lot of water. It's just what kind of water is it and where is it, whereas my impression is the other parts of the world, they just don't have any water.
Yes.
I mean, I'm generalizing, but...
Right.
Okay. Also, a quick reminder for people that we are off again next week, another basketball game, but we will then be back on the 14th talking about health and technology, and then we will wrap up the year with some top stories of 2010. So we'd love to know what kind of stories stood out for you. You can get a hold of us by Facebook or email. We do have a Facebook page this week with Ann Carrick and Vincent Caprio. Big surprise there as far as the name. We have a web page. They're all linked together. I know I have a link off my page to the show page. Do you have a link off of VincentCaprio.org to the show page?
No, but
just go to
www.VincentCaprio.org, right.
To find you, right. So right. If you have a top story for 2010 that stands out, we would love to hear about what that is in advance so we can work that in and see if it matches our list. And our first guest is going to be Fabien Cousteau. We do not have him on the phone yet. We're gonna call him here in a minute. But Vincent, why don't you sort of set the stage, you know, because you know Fabien, so you can give people an idea of what's going on regarding water and in the world, and then we'll go ahead and get his perspective. I'm not going to give it away yet what he's doing, but, you know.
Right.
First, give people an overview.
I'm one of the co-founders of the Water Innovations Foundation, and Fabien is on our advisory board looking at some of the global water issues. Fabien is the grandson of Jacques Cousteau, and he has been instrumental in carrying on the legacy of his grandfather looking at these global water issues. He spends most of his time in the water.
Right.
You know, I kind of This past June 11th was the 100th anniversary of the birth of his grandfather, and I actually was watching Turner Movie Classics, and they actually decided to run all of the ABC specials, and I happened to mention it to him, and he said, "That's great. I didn't even know that." And I said, "And why is that?" He said, because I'm in the water and I don't watch TV, Vincent, like you. So you're at home sitting in your chair watching the news and or talking to somebody on Facebook. You don't get out much.
He's out on a boat somewhere.
Right, and he's been diving since he was four, and he started diving with his grandfather.
Exactly. All right, so I think we do have him on the phone. And Fabien, are you there?
I am indeed.
Bonjour, comment ça va?
Ça va très bien, vous?
Bien, merci. Well, I guess we should stick with English because I don't think we have a large listenership that speaks French. But it's very nice.
We can try our hand at Spanish if you like, but I'm not as good at that.
Yo hablo español muy, muy poquito solamente. So,
bien.
So how are you this evening?
Speak English.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, what country are you calling in from?
I'm actually calling from the strange country of Brooklyn.
Oh, close by.
I just got back from a number of back-to-back trips, and I'm happy to say that I'm home for a few days.
Well, when I was with you on September 27th at our conference, you told me that you were going to be spending October and November in South America. Is that where you were?
Well, I spent 4 days in Peru speaking at the APEC conference, being the only person, non-governmental or even NGO person there. The APEC conference, in case you don't know, is the Asia-Pacific Economic Community Conference, and it encompasses 21 different countries, including, of course, the United States and Canada, as well as Japan and China, and its focus is on economics, and that includes all sorts of topics, including the environment.
Absolutely. You know, and we were talking about it just a few minutes ago that, you know, here in the United States, we have a lot of water, and we have some water issues, but it's not the same as the issues that a lot of other countries are facing when it comes to water.
Oh, that's true. What we're seeing here in the United States is a precursor to what's happening in some of the other countries around the world. The water stresses, the imbalance of water access, and of course the pollution in terms of the drinkable water that's out there.
Right. Do you think that most people underestimate the value and the importance of water on our planet in general?
I think people that have an abundance of water absolutely glaze over the fact that without water, there is no life on this planet. Without clean, drinkable water, there's no healthy population of human beings on this planet. So, you know, by virtue of the fact that we're able to turn on the tap without thinking twice about water quality and water access, we have a tendency to completely forget that it is a very rare commodity, and it's quite literally the life source of this planet.
Right. Well, and I know here a lot of people complain about their drinking water. They don't think it's good, and they might buy bottled water. But the reality is that it's all, you know, potable drinking water, whether it doesn't taste good to you or not, it's still drinkable. And that's just not true in a lot of places.
Well, don't even get me started with bottled water, because that's a travesty in of itself. Shipping said spring water from halfway around the world just because we think that the tap water is not to our liking is a really sad testament to marketing. You know, it's an absolutely artificially made market.
Right.
If you look at the, you know, us maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was laughable to think that we were going to buy water in bottles here in the United States or in Europe. And now it's an enormous market that is creating a huge impact on the environment. There are many ways to access water, and if you don't like the taste of water, there are many things you can do that are much lower impact than actually buying bottled water.
Right. Now, years ago, though, in France, they bottled water. Everybody carried bottled water, when nobody here even, I don't think you could even buy bottled water here, and yet it was you know, everybody was carrying around a bottle of water with them.
That's right. That's right. The but you know, it started with sparkling water, and that's been around for quite a long time. And then it trickled down to certain very tailored spring waters. I won't name them. I'm sure you can name them all. and then from there, it spread to the rest of the world as a very good marketing campaign.
Now, you were the one that told me 2 years ago that 5 out of 6 bottles of water end up in a landfill. And I give that from all my stump speeches now. Tell us where the plastic goes from the bottled water.
You know, I have a tendency to see the planet from the bottom up. Most people see it from the top down. But all this to say that basically bottles, single-use plastics, let's put it that way, and plastic bottles from bottled water are one of the many single-use plastics that end up getting thrown out. You know, this is a material that's meant to last 500 years and can be used very well, if appropriately so. But unfortunately, it's used in things like bottles for bottled water that we use for 30 seconds or a day or two or 30 days. And then the rest of the time, it gets thrown out and goes into the waste stream, and everything ends up in the ocean. We've got to think of our planet like a circulatory system, and everything rolls downhill. You know, unless things are properly disposed of, and most of our garbage is not,
right,
it ends up down the rivers and into our oceans. We have gyres, for example, the Pacific Gyre in the North Pacific, that's the size of Canada, and most
Canada,
of
it's the size of Canada,
filled with plastic. Yeah, there are two concentrations, each the size of Texas, in which you can find plastic down to 90 feet deep, floating at the surface. That's not to talk about the stuff that goes down to the bottom of the ocean. And that's just the Pacific. There's a plastic gyre in every ocean.
I'm sure there is. And even some places where they have like waste and sewage, when it rains too much and it's going to flood, they open the dam and let all the sewage run right into whatever, you know, stream, river, whatever is nearby, because they don't want to flood out civilization, basically. I'm saying. In other words, they don't want it. They don't want the water to rise so high and flood homes. So they open up the dam, and of course, then all of that just runs right out. And I'm like, so what was the point of having it trapped in there if you're just going to open the gates and let it out when you need to? It doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, it was one of the things I was going to ask you. Are there big misconceptions about water and oceans? You know, because I think a lot of people think, well, you know, it's huge and it'll just correct itself. If we put bacteria out there, it'll just kind of disappear.
That's the old misconception, that the oceans are vast and endless and we can't do any damage to it. And, you know, I don't mean to be harping on plastics, because that's just one of many problems.
Right.
The stuff you can see. So when you open up the floodgates or pour oil down your drain, all that stuff that you can't see also goes in there. And that's the stuff that really worries me the most, because you know, our oceans are really in dire straits. They are quite literally dying. If you look at the mouth of the Mississippi, it's growing by 1 mile a year in terms of a dead zone because of all the pollution that's coming out there. It's about 110 miles wide seasonally. And, you know, it's just really frustrating to think that people still believe that the oceans can take any more of this punishment. Look at the Gulf.
I was going to say, do I even dare ask you about the whole oil explosion where they said the oil is just gone? I mean, you know what I'm talking about? Like, they cleaned up a whole bunch of it and the rest is gone. I mean, yes, it's dispersed, I'll buy that. But gone? I mean, it went somewhere. It didn't just evaporate.
Well, you know, I wish we would look back in history and learn our lessons, because if you go back to the Exxon Valdez, which is probably the second most popular oil spill in the United States anyway, and that, you know, it was, what, 21 years ago? If you dig a foot down into where the Exxon Valdez site is, you can find oil. It's everywhere. It has not disappeared. So it's absolutely a fallacy to think that the oil in the Gulf has disappeared. And you hit the nail right on the head when you said it's been dispersed.
Right.
Now, from what I understand with scientists much smarter than I am, they have determined that the combination of oil and dispersant is 10 times worse than just the oil itself.
Well, that's what I kept hearing.
Yeah.
Now, what do you say that when people say, well, the oil came from the earth, so shouldn't it blend itself back into the earth eventually? And would it eventually, but we're talking about hundreds of years as opposed to 5 years.
That's right. It's in hundreds of thousands of years, of course, it'll be absorbed by the natural cycle of things. The question is, are we going to be there to enjoy a healthy climate again? You know, the planet was never built to sustain this kind of onslaught. And the fact that the oil spill was gushing out the way it did was not a natural phenomenon. It was a man-made phenomenon.
Right. In other words, we're generating junk for the ocean faster than it can absorb and repair itself.
That's correct.
Okay. I'm going to have you hold your next thought because we need to take a quick break, and then we will come back. We definitely want to find out more about your Plant a Fish project also. So hang on for us. We'll take a quick break here at This Week with Ann Kerrick and Vincent Caprio, and then we'll be back. And, of course, as always, we do take calls if you have questions, 203-333-WICC. That's 9422 or 1-800-922-6060. We'll be right back.